job, marry the perfect guy. Now she signed up to take care of an 11-year-old in a strange place and is hoping that if she can just be good enough, she can stop her parents' hearts from breaking again. I shoved a hand through my hair. What does any of this have to do with me? Steph held up his hands and grinned.
Look, I get it if you're in that whole I'm not interested phase. The last thing Naomi needs right now is a hot and heavy relationship that's going to get messy because of your baggage. But if you keep looking out for her like you did yesterday, we won't have a problem.
And if I don't? If you use that accommodating nature of hers against her, then we're going to have a huge problem. I can be very creative when it comes to finding ways to make you regret being an asshole. It was ballsy. I had to give it to him. Showing up to a stranger's house with coffee and then threatening him. It felt like something I might do, minus the coffee thing. What kind of creative problem is this Warner asshole having right now? Steph took a long sip of coffee. Right now, I'm letting the humiliation of being left at the altar by the woman he told his friends was beneath his class do its work. But if he comes near her again, I'll ruin him. What did he do? I asked. He blew out a breath and took a sip of his own coffee. I didn't know specifics until last night, and I've been sworn to secrecy.
Bad.
Steph's jaw clenched.
Bad, he agreed.
I didn't like that this guy had Naomi's confidence, that he had access to her secrets, and I was on the outside, left guessing. But I could think of a few dozen things that fell under the category of bad. Any one of them would be worth breaking an asshole's jaw over. He better hope he's never dumb enough to step foot in town limits, I said, putting my empty cup down.
Hate to break it to you, Steph said, looking up from the full-body scratch he was giving Waylon. He's definitely that dumb. Besides, where else would he go when he realizes that Naomi's the one who solved every problem he ever had? He's already emailing her every day. It's only a matter of time before he figures out where she is.
I'll be ready for him, I said grimly.
Good. I'm still sticking around for a while, at least until I know she's okay. But I can't be next to her at all times. It helps to know there's someone else looking out for her.
She wouldn't take him back, would she? I surprised myself with the question. Steph seemed to enjoy the fact that I'd asked the question.
No, but she's soft enough that she might try to help him clean himself up.
Fuck.
There's nothing our girl loves more than getting her hands on a disaster and making it shine.
He gave me a long, even look, and I didn't much care for the connotation. I wasn't a disaster. There was nothing wrong with me. I had my fucking life figured out. Fine. So what do we do in the meantime?
Money's tight for her. She spent most of her own savings on the wedding.
Fucking romantics. Never even considering that things could and would go horribly wrong.
She's prickly about taking loans or handouts, though she might have no choice once her parents catch wind of the situation.
They blow into town pissed off at evil twin and then try to take care of down-on-her-luck good twin, I guessed. He tossed me a salute.
That about sums it up.
I blew out a sigh. She's got no car, no computer. She's picked up some bar shifts from me. But it wasn't enough for a family of two to live off for long. And the best-paying shifts were nights, which meant someone had to watch Waylay. Single moms were the world's unsung fucking heroes. Steph took his phone out of his back pocket, thumbs moving over the screen.
I'm going to apply some charming pressure and push her to put her house up for sale. She's only had it 2 years, but she had a decent down payment, and property values are going up in that neighborhood. There should be enough equity there to help her cash flow problem.
I searched my memory for something that was niggling in the back of my head. Librarian said something about a part-time gig if a grant comes through. I could make sure that grant lands.
He looked at me over his screen. Putting those lottery winnings to good use? So Mr. Smooth had looked me up. It wasn't exactly a secret, and I'd have done the same in his place. What exactly do you do? I asked. He shrugged, still typing. A little of this, a little of that. I've got a guy who can deal with the house. As soon as she gives the okay, we'll have an offer within a week. Two, tops, he predicted. I drained the last of the coffee. So she didn't live with this asshole? Not officially. He was going to move in with her after the wedding. Reluctant bastard liked having his own place. Especially since Naomi cleaned it for him and took care of his meals and laundry. I hope that fucker is sitting in a pair of dirty underwear sobbing into a pot of Campbell's. I stared at him a beat. Who the fuck are you? Me? Steph laughed, stowing his phone back in his pocket. I'm the best friend. Naomi is family. And you two never... He sat there smugly and waited for me to say it.
Never what?
Never dated?
Not unless you count taking her to senior prom because Tina got caught with her mouth on Naomi's date's dick in the locker room at school.
Fucking Tina.
Naomi's been my ride or die before ride or die was a thing. She has never once let me down, and she's forgiven me for the handful of occasions that I've let her down. She's the most amazing woman I know, and that's counting her mother, who's pretty fucking awesome, too. I don't like it when people fuck with my family.
I could respect that.
I'll take that grunt to mean we have an understanding. You'll watch out for her, you won't fuck with her, and together we'll make sure Warner fucking dipshit the third never gets within a city block of her.
I nodded again. Fine.
Give me your phone,
he said, holding out his hand. Why?
Oh, you want me to text Naomi when Warner shows up looking for her?
I handed it over. Steph held it up to my scowling face to unlock it.
Huh. Wonder if it would unlock if you were smiling.
I don't know. Never tried. He smirked.
I like you, Knox. You sure you're not interested in our girl?
Definitely not. I lied. Steph studied me.
You're either dumber than you look, or you're a better liar than I thought.
Are you done? I'd like to get back to not having you in my house.
18. Makeovers for everyone. Naomi. Surprise, Steph said as he pulled into a parking space directly in front of Whiskey Clipper. Uh-oh. What are we doing here? I asked. Back to school here, Steph said. Seriously? Waylay asked, biting her lip. She couldn't quite pull off the bored preteen vibe, and I knew it was going to be a good idea, even if it meant braving a run-in with Knox. Deadly, darling, Steph said, hopping out from behind the wheel of his spiffy little Porsche SUV. He opened the back door for her. First day of school is a fresh start for everyone, and from the reviews, this is the place for hair. I climbed out and joined them on the sidewalk. Steph slung an arm around both of us. First hair, then lunch, then nails, then fashion show for first day outfits. I grinned. Outfits? You're walking way to the bus. You need something that says, responsible yet hot aunt. Waylay giggled. Most moms just show up in pajamas or in sweaty workout stuff. Exactly. We need to make a statement that the wit women are fierce and fashionable. I rolled my eyes. Steph caught me and crossed his arms in impatience. What have I always told you, Naomi? And you listen to this too, Way. When you look good, you feel good, I recited. Good girl. Now get your cute little asses in there. The interior of Whiskey Clipper was cooler than any salon I'd ever set foot in. Instead of the muted pastels and spa music typical in most hair establishments, here it was brick walls and 70s rock. Black and white photos of Knock 'Em Out in the early part of the 20th century hung in stylish gallery frames. One entire wall was dominated by a bar of decanters and bottles of whiskey. Exotic flower arrangements occupied the low, curved front desk and the whiskey bar. The waiting area looked more like a VIP lounge with its leather couches and glass side tables. The concrete floor was covered with a faux cowhide rug. It felt cool, a little steampunky, and a lot expensive. I turned to my friend and lowered my voice. "Steph, I know you were being nice, but money..."
"Shut your stupid, beautiful face, Witty. This is on me."
He held up a hand when I opened my mouth to argue.
"I didn't get you a wedding present."
"Why not?" He looked at me dryly for a long beat. "Right. Of course you predicted it."
"Look, you're getting your my fiancé likes my hair long shit cut into something you love. And that adorable smartass niece of ours is getting a style that is going to be more interesting to those little fuckers in the sixth grade."
"You're impossible to argue with, you know that?"
"You might as well save your energy and quit trying." "Hello, ladies and gentlemen."
Jeremiah called from a station with an ornate mirror and a scarlet cape draped over the chair.
"Who's ready to change their lives today?"
Waylay sidled up to me. "Is he serious?" Steph took her by the shoulders.
"Listen, Shorty, you've never experienced the miracle of the kind of haircut that is so good it parts the clouds and makes the angels sing. You're in for a treat today."
"What if I don't like it?" she whispered.
"If you don't like it, our next stop will be Target, and I'll buy you every hair accessory in existence until we find the perfect way to style your new hair."
"Your hair is yours. You get to decide what to do with it," I assured her.
"You get to decide how you show up in this world. No one else gets to dictate to you who you are," Steph said.
I knew he was saying it for Waylay's benefit, but the truth resonated deep down inside me, too. I'd lost myself while trying to convince someone else that I was what he wanted. I'd forgotten who I was because I'd let someone else take over the definition. "Okay," Waylay said. "But if I hate it, I'm going to blame you guys."
"Let's do this," I said with conviction. "There she is," Steph said, booping my nose and then Waylay's. "Now, let's get started."
He made a beeline for Jeremiah.
"Your friend is weird,"
Waylay whispered.
"I know."
"I kinda like him."
"Yeah, me too."
Maybe it was the second glass of champagne Jeremiah poured for me. Or maybe it was the fact that having a man's fingers massaging my scalp and playing with my hair was a long-forgotten delight. But whatever the reason, I felt relaxed for the first time in... I couldn't count backwards that far. It wasn't that I didn't have things to worry about. There were plenty of those looming, like the guardianship, and money, and the fact that I still hadn't told my parents about their granddaughter. But right now, I had a gorgeous man's hands rubbing delicious circles into my scalp, a glass full of bubbles, and a niece who couldn't stop giggling over whatever Stasia was saying to her while they worked on temporary lowlights. Steph and Jeremiah were deep in conversation about hair textures and product. I wondered if I was imagining the hint of spark between the two. The lingering smiles, the long, flirtatious glances. It had been a while since Steph had been in anything resembling a relationship, and the gorgeous, talented Jeremiah was definitely his kind of catnip. I heard the roar of a motorcycle out on the street. The engine revved once before cutting off abruptly. A few seconds later, the front door opened.
"Hey, boss," Stasia called out.
My bubble of bliss popped. The responding grunt had my heart trying to flutter its way out of my chest like an anxiety-ridden butterfly trapped in a glass jar.
"Stay," Jeremiah said firmly, pressing a hand to my shoulder.
I couldn't see Knox, but I could feel his presence.
"Knox," Steph drawled.
"Steph."
I opened my eyes, wondering when the two of them had gotten on a grudging first-name basis.
"Hey, Way,"
Knox said, his voice a little softer. Hi, she chirped. I heard the approach of his boots, and every muscle in my body went rigid. No woman looked good with wet hair in a salon chair. Not that I was going for alluring or anything, although I was wearing the underwear he'd bought me.
Naomi,
he rasped. What was it about my name from that mouth that made my nether regions feel like they were being electrocuted? In a super sexy, fun way. Knox, I managed to choke out.
Your face is red, Jeremiah noted. Is the water too hot?
Steph snickered. I swear to God I could hear a smugness in the steady clomp of boots as they slowly retreated to the back of the shop. Way to be cool, me. Steph let out a low whistle from the barber chair he was occupying. Sparks, he sang quietly. I raised my head out of the sink, sending a tidal wave of water over the lip of the bowl. What is the matter with you? I hissed. Shut up. He raised his palms in surrender.
Fine. Sorry.
As Jeremiah gently stuffed me back into the sink, I fumed. I didn't want or need sparks, and I certainly didn't want or need anyone else calling attention to them. Jeremiah wrapped a towel around my sodden hair and led me back to his station. Waylay was in the chair behind me, discussing cut and style options with Stasia and Steph.
So, how do we feel about getting rid of some dead weight?
Jeremiah asked, holding my gaze in the mirror. He hefted the bulk of my damp hair in one hand and held it above my shoulders. We feel really good about that, I decided. I was mid-second thought panic as Jeremiah aggressively snipped his way through my long hair when Knox returned with a cup of coffee and some kind of short leather apron over his worn jeans. With his tattoo-adorned arms, the ruthlessly trimmed beard, and those scarred motorcycle boots, he looked like the definition of a man. Our eyes locked in the mirror, and my breath caught in my throat. After a too long beat, Knox whistled and hooked his thumb at the client in the waiting area. The man hefted his tall frame out of the chair and lumbered back. How's it going, Aunt Naomi? Waylay called from behind me. Still look like a wet mop? Kids were jerks.
She's being transformed as we speak,
Jeremiah promised, sliding his long fingers through my significantly shorter hair. I choked back a purr.
How's your hair?
I asked my niece.
Blue. I like it.
She said it with a mix of reverence and excitement that had me smiling. I gave up worrying about whether or not I was overcompensating and turning Waylay into an entitled brat and decided to just go with it.
How blue? Like Smurfette blue? Who's Smurfette?
Waylay asked.
Who's Smurfette?
Stasia scoffed. I heard her rummaging through her pockets and then the telltale sound of the Smurf theme song coming from a phone.
That's Smurfette. Wish my hair was as long as hers, Waylay said wistfully.
You got it pretty short before you came in here, but it'll grow, Stasia told her with confidence. Waylay was silent for a moment, and I craned my neck for a glimpse of her in the mirror.
I didn't cut it, she said, eyes meeting mine.
What's that, sweetheart? Stasia asked.
I didn't cut it, Waylay said again. My mom did, as a punishment. Couldn't ground me because she was never around. So she chopped off my hair.
That fucking ouch! I kicked Steph, then spun my chair around.
Waylay shrugged at the suddenly silent adults around her.
It wasn't a big deal.
That's what she'd told herself. I remembered the tidy bins of hair accessories in her old bedroom. Tina had taken something from her. Something she'd taken pride in. Steph and Stasia looked to me, and I searched for the right words to make this okay. But someone beat me to it.
Knox dropped the razor on a metal tray with a clang and crossed to Waylay's chair.
You get that that was a dick move, right?
Knox, language, I hissed.
He ignored me.
What your mom did was born out of a place of unhappiness and meanness inside her. It had nothing to do with you. You didn't cause it or deserve it. She was just being an asshole, yeah?
Waylay's eyes narrowed as if she were waiting for the punchline.
Yeah, she said tentatively.
He nodded briskly.
Good. I don't know why your mom does the things she does. I don't really want to know. Something's broke inside her, and that makes her treat others like shit. Got it?
Waylay nodded again.
Your Aunt Naomi over there isn't like that. She's not broken. She'll probably still fuck up now and then, but that's because she's human, not broken. Which is why, when you mess up, and you will because you're human too, there has to be a consequence. It won't be cutting your hair or not making you dinner. It'll be boring shit like chores and grounding and no TV. Got it?
I got it, she said quietly.
From here on out, if anyone says they have a right to decide what to do with your body, kid, you kick them in the ass, then come find me,
Knox told her.
Well, hell. The man's hotness had just escalated into underwear-melting territory.
And me, Steph agreed.
Jeremiah gave her a level look.
Me too.
Waylay's lips quirked, and she was having a hard time keeping her smile under wraps.
I, on the other hand, suddenly felt a little damp in the eye and underwear areas.
Then when they're done kicking ass, you come find me, Stasia said.
And me. But preferably me first, before anyone goes to jail, I added.
Party pooper, Jeremiah teased.
You got it, Way?
Knox pressed. The tiniest of smiles played on her lips.
Yeah, I got it, she said.
In that case, let's get back to giving you the best haircut in the world, Stasia said with extra cheer.
My phone buzzed in my lap and I glanced at the screen.
Steph, told you your sister was a gigantic waste of DNA.
I sighed and tossed him a glare, then typed.
Me.
I'm first in line for face punching when she turns up.
Steph. Good girl. Also, I added a bikini wax to your mani-pedi.
Me.
Mean? Why?
Steph. Growly tattoo guy deserves to get laid after that speech.
Also, Jer is 50 shades of gorgeous.
Agree on both counts,
Jeremiah said from where he was reading over my shoulder. Steph laughed while I turned 6 shades of scarlet.
What are you agreeing to?
Knox demanded. I clutched my phone to my chest and spun myself around to face the mirror.
Nothing. No one is agreeing to anything, I said sharply.
Face is burning up, Daisy,
Knox observed.
I considered crawling under my cape like a turtle and hiding there for the rest of my life. But then Jeremiah put his magic hands in my hair and did something lovely to my scalp, and I began to relax against my will. Everyone went back to other conversations while I snuck surreptitious glances in Knox's direction. Not only had the man just given a little girl a hero, he also appeared to be a competent barber. I'd never considered haircuts sexy until this moment, as Knox, arm muscles flexing, trimmed and shaped his client's thick, dark hair. Lots of mundane things were sexy when Knox Morgan was doing them.
Ready for the razor? He asked gruffly.
You know it, the man mumbled from under the hot towel on his face.
I watched in fascination as Knox got to work with a straight razor and a sweet-smelling shaving cream on his friend's face. It felt more relaxing than all those pressure-washing videos I'd binged while planning the wedding. Straight, clean lines leaving behind nothing but smooth shine.
You really should think about it,
Jeremiah whispered as he liberated a curling iron from a tool organizer. Think about what? He caught my eye in the mirror and tilted his head in Knox's direction. Hard pass.
Self-care maintenance, he said.
I beg your pardon?
Some women get manicures. Some get massages or go for therapy. Some hit the gym or their favorite bottle of Shiraz. But the best self-care maintenance, in my opinion, is regular, earth-shattering orgasms.
This time I felt even the tips of my ears go pink. I just ran away from a groom and a wedding. I think my tank is topped off for a while, I whispered. Jeremiah deftly worked his way through my hair with the barrel of the iron.
Suit yourself, but don't you dare waste this style.
With a flourish, he whipped the cape from me and pointed at my reflection. Holy crap! I leaned in, shoving my fingers into the touchable chin-length bob. My dark brown hair now had russet highlights and curled in what I like to call sex waves. Steph let out a wolf whistle.
Damn, Nomi!
I'd spent 2 years growing my hair out for the perfect wedding updo because Warner liked long hair. 2 years planning a wedding that didn't happen. 2 years wasted when I could have looked like this. Confident, stylish, sexy as hell. Even my eyes looked brighter, my smile bigger. Warner Dennison III was officially done taking things from me. What do you think, Aunt Naomi? Waylay asked. She stepped in front of me. Her blonde hair was cut short with a sweep of sleek bangs over one eye. A subtle blue teased through from the bottom layers. You look like you're 16, I groaned. Waylay gave her hair an experimental toss. I like it. I love it, I assured her. And with a sassy new cut, we'll be able to coax some length out of your hair if you want to grow it long again, Stasia told her. She tucked a strand behind her ear and looked at me. Maybe short hair isn't so bad after all.
Stasia, Jeremiah, you're miracle workers, Steph said, pulling cash out of his wallet and pressing it into their hands.
Thank you, I said, offering first Stasia and then Jeremiah a hug. Knox's eyes met mine in the mirror over Jeremiah's shoulder. I released him and looked away. Seriously, this was amazing. Where are we going now? Waylay wanted to know, still staring at herself in the mirror with that tiny smile on her lips.
Nails, Steph said. Your aunt's hands look like talons.
I felt the weight of cool blue-gray eyes on me and looked up. Knox watched me with an unreadable expression. I couldn't tell if he was smoldering or pissed off.
See you around, boss.
I carried the weight of his attention with me as I strutted for the door. Dear Mom and Dad, I hope you're having the best time on your cruise. I can't believe 3 weeks is almost up. Things here are good. I have some news for you. Actually, it's really Tina's news. Okay, here goes. Tina has a daughter, which means you have a granddaughter. Her name is Waylay. She's 11 years old, and I'm watching her for Tina for a while. She's really great. Call me when you get home and I'll tell you the whole story. Maybe Waylay and I can drive up for a weekend so you can meet her. Love, Naomi. 19. High stakes. Naomi.
Well, look who just strutted her fabulous ass in here, Fee called from the corner of Honky Tonk's bar where she was keying the night's specials into the system.
I held out my arms and did a slow turn.
Who knew a haircut could make me feel 10 years younger and 1,000 times sassier? Not to mention the short denim skirt Steph had talked me into.
The man set the gold standard for being a best friend.
While waiting for me to prance out of the dressing room in my new skirt, Steph had been on a conference call with his people, arranging to have my stuff packed and my house on Long Island put on the market.
Tonight, he was staying with Waylay, and I wasn't sure who was more excited about their plans to binge-watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. "You like the hair fee?" I asked, giving my head a shake to make the curls bounce.
"Love it. My brother's a damn genius with hair. Speaking of Jer, is your Steph single, and if so, can we play matchmaker?"
"Why? Did Jeremiah say anything about Steph?" I demanded.
"He only casually mentioned that your friend was the hottest gay man to strut and to knock him out in a decade."
I squealed. "Steph asked me if Jeremiah was seeing anyone."
"Oh, it's so on," Fee announced, pulling the lollipop out of her mouth. "By the way, I've got good news for you."
I grinned as I stowed my purse behind the bar. "Did Idris Elba come to his senses and offer to whisk you away to a private island?" She grinned wickedly.
"Not quite that good. But you've got a party in the private room starting at 9. High rollers."
I perked up. "High rollers?" Fee jerked her head toward the hallway.
"Poker game. Hush, hush. Half a dozen big spenders who feel like throwing away 6 figures on cards."
6 figures? I blinked.
"Is this legal?"
I whispered the question despite the fact that we were alone in the empty bar. The lollipop returned to her mouth.
"Well, let's just say if Chief Morgan wanders his fine ass in here tonight, he doesn't get in that room."
I wasn't sure how I felt about it. As someone who was supposed to be looking good in the eyes of the court, I probably shouldn't be lying to law enforcement about anything. But I'd cross that bridge when I had to tonight. Feeling happy, I swung into the kitchen to get set up for the busy night. The extent of my professional poker knowledge was entirely based on the snippets of games I'd seen on TV while changing channels. I was pretty sure the players on TV looked nothing like the ones crowded around the round table in Honky Tonk's secret back room. Beneath his turquoise polo shirt, the British-accented Ian had muscles that looked like he bench-pressed cars all day. He had dark skin, short-cropped hair, and the kind of smile that made a woman's knees go weak. He was wearing a wedding ring with a whole lot of diamonds. On Ian's right was Tanner. He had reddish-blonde hair that looked like a woman's fingers had just left it. He wore the DC commuter uniform of expensive fitted trousers, rolled-up shirt sleeves, and a loosened tie. No wedding ring, and he'd made certain I'd noticed with every top-shelf scotch I brought him. He fidgeted constantly and jumped every time the door opened. On Tanner's right was a man the rest referred to as Grim, though I doubted his parents had actually named him that. He looked like he'd walked right off the pages of a Silver Fox Motorcycle Club romance novel. Tattoos crisscrossed every inch of visible skin. He kept his sunglasses and scowl firmly in place as he lounged in his chair, sticking to club sodas. Next to Grim was Winona, the only woman at the table. She was tall, built, black, and wore pink metallic eyeshadow that complemented the accents on her figure-hugging denim romper. Her hair was big and bold, just like her laugh, which she was sharing with the man next to her.
"Lucy, Lucy, Lucy," she said. "When are you going to learn not to bluff me?"
Lucian was the kind of handsome that made women wonder if he'd made some pact with the devil. Dark hair, dark smoldery eyes, dark suit. He gave off hints of power, wealth, and secrets like a cologne. He'd arrived later than everyone else, shedding his jacket and rolling up his sleeves as if he had all the time in the world. He took his bourbon neat and didn't try to look down my shirt when I served it.
"Maybe when you stop distracting me with your wit and beauty," he teased.
"Please," Winona scoffed, elegantly stacking her winnings with long red fingernails. I was in the middle of trying to figure out how much one chip was worth and topping off the pitcher of ice water in the corner when the door burst open. Tanner and I both jumped. Knox strode into the room, looking annoyingly sexy as always.
"You son of a bitch," he said.
Everyone held their breath. Everyone, that is, except for Lucian,
who continued to deal the next hand, unruffled by the interruption.
I was wondering how long it would take word to travel, he said blandly.
He set the deck down and came to his feet. For a second, I was sure they were going to launch themselves at each other like stags fighting for supremacy in a nature documentary. Or, you know, actual nature. Instead, Nox's scowl melted and was replaced with the kind of grin that made me feel as warm and gooey inside as a chocolate chip cookie fresh from the oven. Note to self, make chocolate chip cookies. The two men shook hands and exchanged back slaps that would have put me in a chiropractor's office.
What the hell are you doing here?
Nox asked, less aggressively this time.
Currently losing to Winona and thinking about ordering another drink.
I'll get it. Anyone else want another round? I squeaked.
Nox's gaze fell on me. His grin vanished so quickly I wondered if he'd sprained a facial muscle. He took a leisurely, scowly tour of my appearance from hair to feet, disapproval snapping off him like electricity.
Naomi, outside, now, he growled.
Seriously? What's your problem this time, Viking?
There a problem?
Grimm asked, his voice low and dangerous.
None of your concern.
Nox's voice had dropped into sub-zero temperatures.
Go ahead and bring everyone around, Naomi,
Ian suggested, his eyes on Nox. I nodded and headed for the door. Nox was on my heels. He shut the door behind us and took me by the arm, steering me down the empty hallway away from the bar, past his secret lair office. He didn't stop until he'd opened the door at the far end of the hall, which opened into Whiskey Clipper's supply room.
What the hell, Nox?
What the fuck are you doing in that room dressed like that?
I gestured at my empty tray. What does it look like? I'm serving drinks.
This ain't tea time at some goddamn country club, sweetheart. And those people aren't on the PTA.
I pinched the bridge of my nose. I'm going to need a pie chart or a Venn diagram or a database to catalog all of the many ways I piss you off. Why are you mad that I'm doing my job?
You shouldn't be serving that party.
Look, if you're not going to explain, then I don't think I'm responsible for listening. I have drinks to deliver.
You can't just wander into dangerous situations like this.
I threw up my arms. Oh, for Pete's sake, I didn't wander. I showed up for my shift. Fee gave me the table because she knew they'd tip well. He stepped close enough that his boots brushed the tips of my shoes.
I want you out of that room.
Excuse me. You're the one who lets them play here, and you're the one who hired me to serve drinks. Ergo, you're the one with the problem. He leaned in until we were almost touching.
Naomi, these aren't just weekend warriors on bikes or your typical beltway roadkill. They can be dangerous if they want to be.
Yeah? Well, so can I. And if you try to take me off that table, you're going to find out exactly how dangerous.
Fuck me, he muttered under his breath.
That's not happening, I scoffed. He closed his eyes, and I knew the big dummy was counting to 10. I let him get to 6 before stepping around him. My hand had just closed around the doorknob when he caught me, trapping me between the door and his body. His breath was hot on the back of my neck. I could feel my heartbeat in my head.
Days, he said.
Goosebumps prickled on my arms. Warner's only pet name for me had been Babe. And for a moment, I was paralyzed with a desire so intense I didn't recognize it as my own.
What?
I whispered.
They're not your kind of people. If that dickhead Tanner gets too much overpriced scotch in him, he starts hitting on anything with a rack and losing hands. That skirt you're barely wearing is already a distraction. He loses too much, he starts talking shit and starting fights. Grimm, he runs his own motorcycle club in D.C. Mostly personal protection now, but he still dabbles in less legal ventures. Trouble follows him.
Nox was close enough to me that his chest brushed lightly against my back.
Ian's made and lost more millions than anyone else at that table. He's got enough enemies out there that you don't want to be standing next to him when one of them shows up. And Winona carries a grudge. She feels she's been done wrong, she'll burn down your world with a smile on her face.
What about Lucien? For a moment, there was nothing but the sound of our breathing to cover the silence between us.
Luce is a whole other kind of dangerous, he said finally.
Carefully, I turned to face him, not quite managing to cover the flinch when my breasts brushed his chest. His nostrils flared and my heart rate picked up. I've had no problems at that table, and I'm willing to bet if it were Fee or Silver or Max on that party, you wouldn't be having this conversation.
They know how to handle trouble,
and I don't.
Baby, you showed up in town in a fucking wedding dress with flowers in your hair. You scream into pillows when you get stressed out.
That doesn't mean I can't handle myself. He put a hand on the door behind me and leaned into the last bit of my space.
You need a goddamn keeper.
I'm not some helpless damsel in distress, Knox.
Really? Where would you be if it wasn't me who found you in the cafe? Staying in Tina's shithole trailer with Way? No job, no car, no phone.
I was getting very close to whacking him over the head with my tray. You caught me on a bad day.
Bad day? Fuck me, Naomi. If I didn't drive your ass to the goddamn mall, you still wouldn't have a cell phone. Like it or not, you need someone watching out for you, because you're too damn stubborn to do it yourself. You're too busy trying to take care of everyone else to bother with yourself.
His chest was pressing against mine, and I was having trouble focusing on the fury that rose in my throat. Hot, hard muscle against soft flesh. His proximity made me feel drunk.
You're not kissing me, I insisted.
In hindsight, the warning was a tad presumptuous since he'd never kissed me before. But to be fair, he really looked like he wanted to kiss me.
I'd rather wring your pretty little neck right now, he said,
eyes narrowing on my mouth. I licked my lips, preparing to definitely not kiss him. The low rumble in his chest vibrated through my body as he dipped his head toward mine. A new vibration interrupted us.
Fuck,
he hissed, yanking his phone out of his pocket.
What?
He listened, then let out a string of colorful curses.
Don't let him pass the bar. I'll be out in a second.
What's wrong? I asked.
See? That right there is your problem, he said,
pointing a finger in my face as he yanked the door open.
What?
You're suddenly too worried about me to watch your own ass while you're serving a table of criminals.
Has anyone ever told you you're ridiculously dramatic? I asked as he hauled me out.
He was texting with his free hand.
No one who didn't have a death wish. Let's go, Daze. This time, I'll let you make my problem yours.
20. A Winning Hand. Knox. My problem, besides the length of Naomi's skirt, was leaning against the bar in full uniform, making small talk with a handful of regulars. I dragged Naomi with me into the alcove of the kitchen doors. My brother doesn't get near that room. Got it? Her eyes widened. Why are you telling me? Because you're going to distract him and get him the hell out of here. She dug in her heels and crossed her arms. I don't recall the section of my job application that required me to lie to law enforcement. I'm not telling you to lie. I'm telling you to get those good girl eyes and that cleavage over there and flirt with him until he forgets all about busting that game. That doesn't sound any better than lying. It sounds like prostitution, and I'm pretty sure any family court judge would frown upon that during a custody hearing. I blew out a breath through my nostrils,
then dug out my wallet. Fine. I'll give you $100. Deal! I was still blinking when she snapped the bill out of my hand and headed in my brother's direction. It was an asshole move on my part, using her need for cash and putting her in a sketchy position. But I knew my brother, and Nash wouldn't do anything to hurt Naomi's chances at becoming Waylay's guardian. Hell, any idiot with one good eye could tell the woman was several classes above her sister. Fuck, I muttered to no one. Interesting. I found Fee, leaning against the wall, smugly enjoying one of the lollipops that served as a cigarette surrogate. What? Her eyebrows wiggled. You never freaked when Max or me served that party. You and Max know how to handle yourselves, I argued. Looks like Naomi was handling herself just fine in there. Maybe the problem isn't her? You want to be my new problem, fiasco? I snarled. She was not remotely intimidated, which was exactly why a boss shouldn't be friends with their employees. I think Knox Morgan is Knox Morgan's biggest problem, but hey, what do I know? She said with an annoying little shrug. Don't you have work to do?
And miss the show?
Fee nodded over my shoulder. I turned and spied Naomi putting a flirtatious hand on my brother's arm. When she laughed and tossed her hair, my brilliant plan didn't seem so brilliant. God damn it. I left Fee and maneuvered my way through the crowd, getting close enough to hear Nash say, Let me guess, illegal poker game in the back room and you were sent to distract me. Fuck me. Naomi's eyes went wide, and I realized the woman had no poker face whatsoever.
Are you always this handsome and intelligent? She asked.
I am, Nash said with a stupid wink that made me want to punch him in his stupid face. But it also helps that this town doesn't know how to keep its mouth shut. I'm not here for the game. Well, you're not here for my waitstaff, so what the hell are you doing here? I said, interjecting myself into their cozy little conversation like a jealous idiot. Nash shot me a smug look as if he knew exactly how annoying I found him. Heard an old friend was in town. The rumors are true. We all turned and found Lucian standing just outside our circle. My brother grinned and shoved me out of the way. He welcomed Lucian with a hard hug and a slap on the back. Good to have you back, brother. It's good to be back, Lucian agreed, returning the hug. Especially since the waitstaff got even more interesting. He gave Naomi a wink. Why the fuck the entire town suddenly decided winking at Naomi was a good idea was beyond me, and I was going to put a stop to it as soon as possible. Yeah, everything's great, I said. Don't you have drinks to serve? Naomi rolled her eyes.
I didn't get rid of your brother yet.
You can keep the 100 if you go away, I said, needing to get her out from between my brother and my best friend.
Deal. Lucian, I'll see you back in there with a fresh drink, she promised. Nash, it was fun flirting with you.
The pleasure was all mine, darling, my brother drawled, tossing her a little salute. We all watched her sashay to the bar. My head hurt from not yelling. My jaw was so tight I worried I'd crack a tooth. I didn't know what it was about that woman, but Naomi Witt had me tied up in fucking knots. I didn't like it one bit. What are you doing back in town? Nash asked Lucian. You sound like a cop, Lucian complained. I am a cop. Chief Nash rankled me. The three of us had grown up raising hell and bending laws until they broke. Nash growing up to be a cop felt like some kind of betrayal. The straight and narrow was too confining for me. I didn't stray too far from the line these days, but I made sure to step into the gray every now and again for old time's sake. Lucian was another story.
Trouble didn't follow him. He had a tendency to make it wherever he went. If he was back in Knockemout, it sure as hell wasn't for a stroll down memory lane. A man can't feel nostalgic for his childhood? Lucian mused, expertly avoiding the question. Your childhood sucked, Nash pointed out. You haven't been back in years. Something brought you back, and it better not be trouble. Maybe I got tired of hearing how the Morgan brothers are too stubborn to remove their heads from their asses. Maybe I came back to help you bury the hatchet. Naomi breezed by with a tray full of drinks and an easy smile for Lucian and Nash. The smile changed to a scowl when she looked at me. No one needs any help with any hatchet, I insisted, stepping in front of him to cut off his view of Naomi's curvy, retreating ass. That hatchet that you two have been wrestling over for 2 years is stupid. Get over it and move the fuck on, Lucian said. Don't use that beltway bullshit tone with us, Nash said. Lucian had built a political consulting firm that involved far too many shadows for Nash's liking. Our friend had a gift for putting the fear of God into his clients or the people who stood between his clients and what they wanted. That shit don't fly and knock 'em out, I reminded him. You two have nothing to worry about. Let's have a drink for old time's sake, he suggested. Can't tonight, Nash said. On duty. Then I guess you'd better get back to work, I told my brother. Guess I better. Try not to let any pissed off poker players bust up the place tonight. I don't feel like handling the paperwork. Dinner, tomorrow night, your place, Lucian said, pointing upstairs. Works for me, I said. Fine, Nash agreed. It is good to see you, Lucy. Lucian gave him a half smile. It's good to be seen. He turned to me. I'll catch up with you when you're hovering over Naomi. I flipped him off. When he left, Nash turned to me. You got a second? Depends. It's about Tina. Fuck. I'll walk you out. The August night was still smotheringly humid when we went through the kitchen and walked out into the parking lot. What's the problem? I asked when we got to Nash's SUV. Got a few more details on Tina. She and her new man were moving stolen goods. Nothing major. TVs and phones. Tablets. But rumor has it the boyfriend is connected to some bigger criminal enterprise. Who's the boyfriend? He shook his head. Either no one knows his name or they're not saying it to me. Don't got much of anything, do you? Just a gut feeling. Tina didn't just decide to abandon her kid for fun. I think she's in deep with some shit. He looked up at the inky night sky. Heard a couple of people saying they think they saw her over in Lawlerville. Lawlerville was less than a half hour's drive, which meant Tina probably wasn't planning on staying gone. Fuck, I muttered. Yeah. I knew what Nash wanted from me. Any other circumstance, I would have made a mask. But since this involved Naomi and Waylay, I wasn't in the mood to fuck around. I'll ask around, see if any sources who avoid cops will feel chatty with me, I told him. Appreciate it. Instead of going home like I'd planned, I pretended to check a few things off my list. I played bar back for Silver while Max took her dinner break. Then I answered the 24 or so emails I'd been avoiding. I even ducked into the shop supply room and cut down cardboard boxes for the recycler. The fourth time I caught myself heading in the direction of the poker game, I decided to remove myself from temptation and headed for the keg room. I hoped the chill and the physical labor of moving full kegs around would take the edge off my annoyance. I had a whole list of reasons to be pissed off at the world, and most of them revolved around Naomi Witt. Every conversation with her ended in me having a headache and a hard-on.
Watching other men trip over their tongues when she was around only made it all worse. I didn't want her, but I wanted to claim her as mine just to keep every other asshole away from her. I needed to get drunk and laid. I needed to forget she existed. My hands were fucking frozen and my temper had cooled by the time I finished restacking the kegs. It was almost 11. I figured I'd check in at the bar, then go the hell home. When I hit the bar, Silver glanced up from the moonshine she was pouring. "Mind checking on the private party?" she asked. "Why?" She shrugged. "Been a while since I've seen Naomi." My temper reignited like someone had thrown a gas can and a lighter on it. I didn't exactly kick the door open, but it was a more dramatic entrance than I usually made. Tanner, the skinny idiot who partied too hard to hold on to his money, fell out of his chair. Naomi, however, didn't bother looking up. She was squeezed in between Winona and Grimm, tongue poking out between her lips as she studied the cards in her hand.
"Okay, tell me again what beats a pair," she said.
Ian launched into a Texas Hold'em 101 lecture while Grimm leaned over to look at her hand.
"Raise 'em," he advised.
Tentatively, she picked up a blue chip and looked at him. He shook his head. She added two more chips and, on his nod, tossed them into the pile at the center of the table.
"Raise,"
she announced, wiggling her ass in her seat. I rounded the table and leaned in. "What the fuck are you doing, Naomi?" She finally looked up at me, bemused.
"Learning to play poker."
"Fold," Winona sighed.
"Never trust a rookie's luck."
"I'll see you and raise you," Lucian decided, dropping a fistful of chips onto the table.
"Leave her alone, Morgan," Ian told me. "Our drinks are full and she's never played."
I bared my teeth.
"Relax, Morgan," Winona said. "We all staked her some chips. It's just a friendly hand."
Lucian and Naomi were engaged in a stare down. I leaned in again and whispered in her ear,
"Do you know what those chips are worth?"
She shook her head, watching as the action returned to Ian, who folded.
"They told me not to worry about it."
"That's 20 grand in the pot, Naomi."
I'd pushed the right button. She stopped staring at Lucian and looked at me as she started to come out of her chair. Grimm put a hand on her shoulder to hold her in place, and I fixed him with a cold glare.
"Fucking relax, Knox," he said. "Winona's right, it's a friendly hand. No loans, no interest. She's a quick learner."
$20,000?
Naomi squeaked.
"I'll call," Tanner decided, throwing in his chips.
"Show 'em,"
Grimm growled, shoving a matching stack of chips into the center of the table. Tanner lay down a shitty two-pair. Lucian took his time arranging his cards before revealing a nice little straight.
"Uh-oh,"
Winona hummed under her breath.
"Your turn, sweetheart,"
Grimm said, his face unreadable. Naomi dropped her cards face up on the table.
"I believe this is a bigger straight than yours, Lucian," she said.
The table erupted in cheers.
"You just won $22,000,
Winona told her.
"Holy shit! Holy shit!"
Naomi looked up at me, and the joy on her face was a sucker punch to my windpipe.
"Congratulations. Now get your ass up," I said, still capable of being an ass.
Lucian groaned.
"Suckered in by those innocent eyes. Every damn time."
I didn't want him looking at her eyes or any other part of her. I pulled Naomi's chair out for her.
"Wait, do I get a victory dance? How do I pay everyone back?"
"You definitely get a victory dance," Tanner said, lecherously patting his lap. Ian saved me the trouble and slapped him in the back of the head.
"Naomi, now,"
I said, hooking my thumb toward the door.
"Hold your horses, Viking,"
She carefully counted out equal shares of the chips and started returning them to their original owners. Grim shook his head and covered her hand with his tattooed one.
"You won fair and square. You're keeping the winnings, and you can have my stake."
"Oh, but I couldn't," she began.
"I insist. And when I insist, people do what I tell them."
Naomi didn't see a scary biker sort of criminal making that proclamation. She saw a cuddly, tattooed fairy godfather. When she tossed her arms around his neck and gave him a noisy kiss on the cheek, I saw the man actually smile, a feat previously thought to be impossible.
"For that reaction, you'll keep mine as well," Lucian said.
Naomi whooped and rounded the table and kissed him loudly on the cheek. Ian and Winona did the same and laughed through Naomi's stranglehold hugs.
"Get that niece of yours something pretty," Winona told her.
Christ on a cracker, exactly how much of her autobiography had she shared with them?
"I'm just going to hang on to mine," Tanner said,
pulling back the chips he'd loaned her. The rest of the table glared at him.
"Cheap ass," Winona said.
"Come on, it's been a rough week," he whined.
"In that case, here's a tip from me,"
Naomi said, handing over a $100 chip. The woman was a sucker, and it looked like Tanner was officially in love.
"Ladies, gentlemen, what do you say we call it a night? I hear there's a band out front tonight. We could steal one or two of Knox's private bottles and reminisce about the good old days," Ian suggested.
"Only if Lucy promises me a dance," Winona said.
I waited until they'd cashed out and exited the room, leaving Naomi and me alone. She looked up from the pile of cash they'd left in front of her. It was one.